Hello, my name is Bea, and I'm camping in Union, Illinois. You're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you very much. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. It's great to be here with you for show number 995. What we do here on the program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. And hey, we are officially 2 weeks out from the Outside the Loop 1000th episode taping event at Fitzgerald's in Berwyn. It is happening on Saturday, November 22nd at 3 p.m. and the doors open at 2:30. So it's great. There's going to be a full bar. There's baby gold barbecue that is served at Fitzgerald's. And it's just an awesome roadhouse environment. If you've seen a show at Fitzgerald's, you know it's a throwback and it's great. And we want to pack the place. And so you can be there. And we have guests coming up. We've got Dominic Pasiga, who has written a new book on Chicago politics. He is a local historian. And we also have our good friend, Steve Krakow, also known as Plastic Crime Wave, for a very special edition of The Secret History of Chicago Music. He'll be on hand. We've got the founders of Chicago's first mental health urgent care center and AJ Rosales, singer-songwriter based in Chicago. He will be performing live music at the event. So here's the cool part. It's totally free, and you could just go to FitzgeraldsNightclub.com, and you can RSVP. You do have to reserve your spot, so RSVP through FitzgeraldsNightclub.com. You can also go to OutsideTheLoopRadio.com or WGNRadio.com and just find the info up there as well. But just go to the Fitzgerald site, FitzgeraldsNightclub.com. It is going to be a lot of fun. We want to see you there. The 1000th episode taping. And if you scream loud enough and cheer loud enough, you can be on the radio. You can be on the podcast because we will be playing this stuff back. So there you go. I'm coming up on Lou's show, Lou Manfredini, House Smarts Radio. I'll be talking about this more later on today. You know, one person who I don't think will be at the Fitzgerald's taping is Mayor Johnson, although maybe he'll be in the audience. I don't know. If he were to drop by, I'd give him an Outside the Loop magnet, though. Hey, did I mention that we're giving away swag at the Fitzgerald's 1000th event taping? Yeah, we've got some swag. So get there for the swag at the very least. If I did give the mayor a gift, and that gift was over $50. I don't know if the magnet is. In fact, it's not, but it's still a nice magnet. If it's over $50, he'd have to report that gift, and he'd have to store it in a special room in City Hall. This special gift closet is something I talked about a few months ago on this show, and it's amazingly back in the conversation. And this thing, I mean, I don't know. I just look at this. This is an easy issue for the mayor to fix. I mean, politicians get gifts all the time. There's all kinds of ethics rules, which, look, are good. And, you know, just follow the ethics rules and we'll be fine. Channel 11, WTTW. By the way, big shout out to Channel 11, WTTW, in these times. Persevering, still doing reporting. Heather Sharone over at Channel 11, who was on this show a few times, as a matter of fact. She's a great local reporter. She has the story that it's back in the news, and this gift room has things like cufflinks and neckties and all kinds of stuff. She says that Mayor Brandon Johnson twice blocked the city's watchdog from searching for gifts he accepted on behalf of the city without reporting them, as mandated by the city's ethics ordinance. That's according to Inspector General Deborah Witzberg. She said this on Tuesday. In addition, Mayor Johnson's staff did not turn a small city hall room into a storage room for the gifts he accepted on behalf of the city until February, after Witzberg first revealed he had quietly accepted, quote, cufflinks, designer handbags, and men's shoes, end quote, and failed to document those gifts, according to Witzberg's report. The mayor's office has taken the position here that it must open the doors to oversight only when it suits them to do so, and that position does little to chip away at mistrust or to pay down the deficit of legitimacy, Witzberg said in a statement. And so my question is, Mayor Johnson, why not do this, man? Just open up the closet. What's in there? And here's what a spokesman for the Johnson administration said. This is Cassio Mendoza. He said, I think there are much more important issues in the city of Chicago that the Office of the Inspector General and the press could be focused on. He goes on to say, I would just note that the designer handbags language in the Inspector General's release is disingenuous at best and racist at worst, given that the bag is an obvious cheap knockoff. And as you know, the vast majority of the items in the gift room are t-shirts and hats, but the insinuation is that there are a bunch of luxury goods hidden away, end quote. From what I've seen, there are some luxury goods in there. And you know that the mayor's office is kind of freaked out because they go to this, well, this must be racist thing, which I don't understand how saying that there are designer handbags is racist. Look, if there's handbags in there, okay? Just open up the office. Let us see what's in there. Not a big deal. Also, apparently, we can go in there. Chicagoans can sign up. The public can go in for 15-minute slots to inspect the gift room once every 3 months, but just two Chicagoans have done so. Okay, come on, people. We can sign up. Go to the website. City of Chicago, right? Come on. Let's see what's in there. And Mayor Johnson, just open the thing up. You know, do what you're supposed to do. And show up to Fitzgerald's on Saturday, November 22nd. The gift of the magnet will be under $50. Problem solved. The government is still shut down, and according to the Illinois Department of Human Services, an estimated 1.9 million people in Illinois will not receive benefits if the government shutdown continues and there isn't any other kind of government intervention. This impacts many people, like I said, but also many veterans in Illinois. That's where the Veterans Assistance Partnership comes in. This is a local nonprofit that offers resources to veterans across Chicagoland who have lost access to their Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program benefits, also known as SNAP benefits. Tashi Simmons is the founder of this organization, and she is here with us today. Tashi, welcome to Outside the Loop.
Hi, thank you. Thank you all for having me. How you doing?
Doing great, and I know that this is maybe not a great time for people. This is kind of a crazy time where we hear about, you know, the government's not going to fund SNAP programs, then they're going to fund it a little bit, and for some people. So we'll get into all that, but let's talk about your organization. This organization, again, called Veterans Assistance Partnership, online at veteransassistancepartnership.org. You founded this, I think it's back in 2020. You're a veteran yourself. Tell us how this all got off the ground.
Yes, absolutely. Like you said, my name is Tashi Simmons. I'm known as She Commando because I am an author, a published author of the book She Commando. I was in the military for 24 years, so right now my title is considered Retired First Lieutenant Tashi Simmons. I went in right after high school, and I came in as a private first class, an E3, and went all the way up the rank on the enlisted side as an E8 Master Sergeant for the U.S. Army. And then I switched over with a master's in healthcare administration, allowing me to join the medical corps, which is how I got the first lieutenant rank. So, yes, being in the military right after high school, growing up in the city of Chicago, I've always had a heart and a niche to assist those in need. And it just so happened it worked out for military. And now my focus has been narrowed down. Even though we raise our hand and we swear an oath to support our country and survive for our country, the thing is, it didn't stop just because I retired. So that's where my thought process began with Veterans Assistance Partnership. And as the executive officer of Veterans Assistance Partnership, or VAP, if you will, for those that's in the military, that's Victor Alpha Papa.
There you go.
That was wanted to bring it in. Veterans Assistance Partnership is a nonprofit organization. And, you know, we're committed to helping veterans mainly rebuild their lives with dignity and stability. And so our focus is on three main areas, which is housing, employment, and what you just discussed, food security, which is why we hit the ground running, as I always do. So our mission is to make sure that no veterans who serve this country is left behind, especially those who are disabled or struggling to meet just basic needs.
Right. And it's amazing that we have to have this conversation. You know, people go into the military and, like you say, they take this oath to the Constitution and to support and defend this country. And yes, they do, you know, exemplary work. And then when they're out, it seems like I think there's a sense that maybe they feel forgotten and society maybe forgets about them. So what you're trying to do here, your work with this organization that you started, this Veterans Assistance Partnership, you are trying to provide some just basic services and resources. Tell us about how this works practically and how you work with partnerships.
Yes, because there is, like you said, there is absolutely no way someone who has sacrificed and served this country should go hungry. Mm-hmm. As you know, many Chicago residents are not new to the lack of grocery stores and food disparities that's plagued out in our city, especially on the south side and the west side when there's food deserts. So, yes, definitely we do take the necessary steps to assist those that are in need. Right now, many disabled veterans in Illinois, particularly across the Chicagoland area, are being affected by this recent SNAP program changes. So these changes have caused some veterans to lose their benefits or face, like you stated earlier, reduced assistance, even though their financial and medical conditions haven't changed. So for veterans living on a fixed income, this can mean choosing between food and medication. And that's a choice no one who serves should ever have to make a decision about. So yes, we have partnered with some of the most prestigious companies that are out here. There's a lot of organizations, don't get me wrong, that are assisting veterans. But what makes VAP different? You know, what makes VAP stand out? And that's our hands-on, veteran-to-veteran outreach approach. We don't just refer people, we walk them through the actual process. And yes, we do partner with other organizations, especially those who are well off to be able to assist these veterans and get these packets up to the top of the top representatives to get these packets through.
So in terms of the effect that you're having here, can you tell us about, you know, how many people are coming to you and you know, are you sort of staying busy? I mean, I guess if you are, that's maybe not great news because that means a lot of people are in need, but in terms of the impact that you're having through your organization, the Veterans Assistance Partnership, what is that impact?
So the impact that has been happening for us is there are a lot of veterans that are coming to us, and mainly it's those that have lost the benefits, that have no way of getting food. So, and then as I spoke about early, the food desert is a problem. So we have to have food, give them directions in regards to how to get food to them because they do not have grocery stores that are near them that gives them healthy options. Now, what we do have in the areas of our clients is a lot of restaurants. Mm-hmm. Those are widely available. And so that is a problem that we're having as far as our clients. The other thing is having to make a decision on what to put their money towards, especially our senior citizens and those that's disabled that are on fixed incomes. They cannot decide which one they need to do, whether it's pay their rent, pay their mortgage, pay for food, you know, because they're running into all these issues. And those are the major issues that we're having. In addition, like, we have problems with, well, we are having problems with when it comes to them saying to us, hey, there is no way I can stand in line this long. There is no way I can sit on this call that long. These are issues that we're really running into because, you know, we've spent our entire time in the military serving our time and being on time.
Sure,
we don't
right.
want to there on this line. So that's where Veterans Assistance Partnership steps in to help those out, to stand in the line for them, to streamline and be the bridge to get it up to where it needs to be as far as their package, and making sure that their documentations are correct and in place for the benefits.
And these are all things that you mentioned right there that I don't think we think about, right? I mean, it's like, you know, who do you call if you need assistance from the government with fill in the blank? Or where do you go? What office can you go to? Or who can you talk to? It's a big, it's a big government out there. It's complicated. It is. And really thinking about those who served in the military, it goes back to, I think, just trying not to forget the dedication, the sacrifice that these folks have made. And really, when you put it all out there for your government, and then you might feel like your government is kind of forgetting about you, that's a really awful feeling.
It really is. And that's where I love to step in. You know, I'm a human being. I've been in the military, so I understand the aspects of what everyone is going through as far as the challenges that we come up against after service, as you mentioned, especially when resources are delayed or cut, or just thinking about how veterans gave their time and health to protect this country. There is no way we should ever allow them to go hungry.
Well, this organization is doing some wonderful work. It's called Veterans Assistance Partnership, or VAP. And we could check out the website, veteransassistancepartnership.org. Tashi Simmons is the founder and executive director of the Veterans Assistance Partnership. Tashi, I really appreciate the time. And hey, thank you for all of the great work you're doing locally here. This is a crazy time for so many reasons. And I think an organization like yours is helping to provide some stability for a lot of folks. So thanks for talking today.
Oh, my pleasure. And just my message is simple. No veteran should ever go hungry, not in this country, not in this state, and not on my watch. The Veterans Assistance Partnership is here to make sure our heroes get the support and dignity that they deserve. So thank you as well for being able to put me on so I can get this information out there. There is help, so don't give up.
Let's talk local music this week, coming from the project known as The Gunshy from here in Chicago. We can check out thegunshy.com. That's T-H-E-G-U-N-S-H-Y, thegunshy.com. Matt Abregast is the guy behind The Gunshy, and he is here with us today on Outside the Loop. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. So I think your music's cool. I mean, you've got this kind of folk tradition kind of thing going on with a little bit of rock and roll at times, definitely some rock influences. Tell us about your music overall, what you're trying to do here.
Oh, boy. well, I guess right now, you know, this is a project I've had since I was 18 or 19 years old. So it's had many different intentions. It's funny you mentioned kind of traditional country-ish stuff. I think I've settled, I'm 45 years old. I've settled into some of the music that my parents listened to growing up. And that's, become something that I've cherished and attached myself to more as I get older. And, definitely throughout writing this and stuff, John Prine, who recently passed away, and and some of these kind of country leaning songwriters that I've always kind of loved, but I always kind of was afraid to maybe show those influences too much, I've fully embraced on this record.
Yeah, I'll say, as a fellow 45-year-old, I'm totally down with John Prine those folks of that era. I think that, you know, their legacy is just tremendous here, and it shows up, I think, in what you do. And you have a new album that comes out on December 5th. It's called Hurricane Umbrellas. This is your first album in 9 years. Tell us about what you're doing here. It's been a little while, huh?
Yeah, well, my daughter is 8 years old. So that plays into that timeline a little bit. But I will say since then there were little projects coming in here and there. We did, during the first term of the current president, we did a project that was very much, we wrote a song a month and we're donating proceeds to different organizations and things. And, it took me a little while to feel like it was okay to write more reflective and personal songs again, given the nature of everything going on in the world. And I think this is a way of trying to balance those two a little bit to, you know, self survival, while still, not ignoring the chaos going on around us a little bit. And so I've been writing throughout that time, but, trying to focus that energy kind of outward a little bit. I did a little bit of a collaborative project with a friend of mine, over the COVID years. And then honestly, those 4 or 5 years around COVID or whatever that was just mm-hmm. kind of felt like it was lost anyway. So, it feels good to kind of regroup a little bit, be able to play shows again, to share my music with people again, and hopefully help them out one way or another.
Yeah. You know, I mean, what a time we're living through right now. You mentioned COVID, and I remember during COVID asking, well, what's going to come out of this? Anything creatively? Because everybody was at home. And so yeah. I know a lot of musicians were just writing stuff and recording things at home. But now we're living in a, man, I don't even know what we're living through here. This is some crazy stuff. I know that you are someone, you know, you're active in that sense. I know you were at the No Kings 2 protest. But I have to think, I'm just wondering, you know, what's going to come out of this era, thinking about people and their plight and just creatively, you know, what's that spark that's going to be sort of ignited with what we're going through right now? I guess that's kind of what I'm wondering. Are you thinking like that too?
Yeah. I hope that artists don't become complacent. I think I've worried about that with myself too. It's kind of balancing that line between focusing all of your attention on, you know, kind of trying to shoot down today's big headline and also trying to, you know, help people, not necessarily distract them from the chaos, but give them, something maybe it is distract them. I don't know, but, you know, it's a little bit of that, but I think complacency is my biggest concern. I think I'm seeing a lot of that in general with what's going on in this current administration. And that scares me more than anything, just kind of pretending like it's not happening just to go along with your day.
Right. And I know that that's a real worry, like you're talking about here, but you have been working on this stuff, and the album again is called Hurricane Umbrellas. This music, the first single called Buzzer Beater. I really dig that song. That's a beautiful song. And you talk about those sort of folky country influences. I think you hear it on that song.
Thank you. Yeah. The lap steel player and some of the musicians that I've kind of come across over the last 20, 25 years of doing this, all kind of came together and gave me some moments where I could just kind of sit back and smile at these performances that people contributed to my music, which that's a good example of that, with some of that steel playing throughout it.
Open up for Springsteen at Asbury Lanes. Make the buzzer beat in the set game.
It sounds great. And let's talk about performances here. The big record release show is happening at the Beat Kitchen in Chicago. That's on December 7th, coming up here in, less than a month? And how about that? So that's the record release show. You're going to have a bunch of people playing with you that night.
I am, yeah. Full band style. First time playing full band and geez, probably going back to that 7-8 year mark. I'm excited.
That's great. And you have a kind of a more relaxed show coming up next Saturday. That is November 15th. tell us about this. This is kind of like your spot that you converted into a little studio.
Yeah, my partner and I bought an old 2-flat in Logan Square, and it had a really sketchy attic that we were fortunate enough that the contractor that we worked with to do some of the work on the house was a fellow musician, and he definitely kind of got our intention for the space and turned it into this beautiful kind of open, clean space that we use to do quieter shows. We've hosted a bunch of different touring artists coming through that want to do more low key things. And it's great for something like this. Kara Eubanks, who's been playing violin with me now for about 20 years, has been doing some of these more intimate solo shows. She's coming through with a piano player, and they're going to play. So we kind of decided she's on my new album. So we're going to play some songs together as kind of a more low key introduction to the songs. And we've got the records and the CDs in already, which I'm relieved for. So we'll have some of those available too. And it'll be a nice little, I actually turned 46 at midnight. So it's a nice, low key hangout with some music.
I love that. Well, happy early birthday.
Thank
you. We could go check out the website, thegunshy.com. Thegunshy.com. That's the project that Matt Abregast is really just the creative force behind. And the new album is called Hurricane Umbrellas. It comes out December 5th. We should check out the website, thegunshy.com, and we can get that album. Hey, Matt, thank you so much for talking to us today. Keep up with the great music. And we need some light and some entertainment during these crazy times.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you again for having me, Mike. This is great.
Normally, when Chicago is dethroned from the top of a list, it's not great. We like to think that we've got some good stuff going on around here, and we do. However, maybe this time we will celebrate getting dethroned. What exactly are we celebrating? Well, Chicago is no longer the country's rattiest city. That's according to Orkin. Yes, that Orkin, the pest control company, the new rattiest city. Congrats to Los Angeles. And look, it's no secret that a rat problem still persists around here, and it's been that way for a long time. How long? Well, since I'm coming up on my 1000th episode of this show in a few weeks, I'm getting a bit nostalgic, and I've been opening up the Outside the Loop audio archives. So right now, let's rewind to 2007 for this clip from Outside the Loop number 16, when I spoke to evolutionary ecologist Joel Brown of UIC about rats in Chicago. Oh, also, if there's one thing I'm proud of all these years later, it's that the audio production quality of this show has improved drastically. You'll see what I mean. Let's roll the clip.
Now, what Andy and I were talking about just before, something that we see often are, well, rats. We see, a decent number of rats. Tell us a little bit about the rat population in Chicago.
That's right. So rats, and particularly the Norway rat, and then what is often called the black rat or the roof rat. Anyway, two species of rats have kind of become human commensals. They're sort of a traveling roadshow that had been spread from Europe going many centuries back, that have traveled with humans, and they make their homes then in our cities and in our farms. And here in Chicago, I would not describe it as a horrific rat problem. Obviously, rats create a certain amount of social discomfort, so nobody likes to see them around. They're often associated with unsanitary conditions or people leaving food out and about. And here in Chicago, primarily, we have the Norway rat. It's a bit larger than the other species of rat. It's the one that you will see along the L lines. It's the ones you'll see at night in the alleys. And these rats are definitely part of this community that we have here in Chicago. But in most places where people are pretty good about throwing away their garbage, keeping lids on the garbage cans and whatnot, they're not really a huge problem.
But rats, they're pretty smart, aren't they?
You know, these rats, and presumably with centuries of living with humans, and while we always speak of trying to build a better mousetrap, in response to us constantly coming up with better rat traps, we've probably selected in these rats what, yeah, you might call very clever behavior. So these rats are very good at negotiating our buildings. They're good at negotiating the kinds of garbage cans. They're good at negotiating our walls, even telephone poles and wires. And they also seem to be rather crafty, not surprisingly, at being able to avoid us controlling them.
Now, is there like a rat hierarchy, or, I mean, how do they work with themselves in a city like Chicago? How do they build a community?
Your typical rats will take up residence, in some cases digging their own hole, if there is no available sewer pipe, culvert, underneath eaves, piles of leaves, piles of refuse. Mm-hmm. All of those can provide a home for a rat. The other feature of rats that's quite remarkable is they can move a fair distance in a night. They're not at all unhappy about taking up residence in a vacant lot and then learning their way around the neighboring apartment building or up and down the neighboring alley. So they will sometimes move over an area of several blocks. Now, they obviously encounter each other. Rats aren't really famous for having sophisticated social structures on there, but they certainly have no problems finding each other. And while the Norway rat can be fairly aggressive to other rats, particularly if it's an older, larger rat to a younger rat, they're not sort of directly hostile to each other, nor do they have really much of a sort of a social structure themselves. They tend to be sort of more solitary, but they are not at all averse to feeding in close proximity to each other and sort of fraternizing with each other.
And why is it that rats only, or usually, the majority of times I've ever seen a rat has been at night? Are they primarily nocturnal?
Rats generally are nocturnal. They will often be found at twilight. It's kind of like, just like the early bird gets the worm, the first rat that gets out might get the first pickings on what people have left over.
Mm-hmm.
But traditionally, rats are nocturnal. Under more natural conditions, that would be to avoid their normal predators. In a city situation, this nocturnal behavior is because it would draw a lot more attention from animal control people. And also, during the day, there's just a lot more human activity.
Well, you know, you mentioned before that rats kind of, they bring along with them a stereotype, and that is maybe unsanitary conditions or being dirty. But you, I mean, how do you see rats? You obviously are fascinated by rodents and rats and wildlife. How do you see them?
You know, rats are part of that bit of urban wildlife that I have to give grudging admiration to, in the sense that they really are that component that has kind of co-evolved with humans.
Mm-hmm.
They've been part of that kind of a bit of an evolutionary arms race with humans, and they've come out doing very well. So when I see a rat, I have to confess I don't necessarily share that same level of social discomfort. There obviously are concerns about disease transmission. Rats obviously can do economic damage. They certainly gnaw through things. They can pose unsanitary conditions if you're dealing with restaurants or places where food is served. But as a general rule, I think we can kind of congratulate ourselves in that rats really don't carry the huge kind of burden that they might have carried, say, 50 years ago, 80 years ago, 100 years ago, where their presence could actually indicate disease or more serious problems. You really would describe them more as being part of those nuisance species that does kind of carry that stigma.
That clip from Outside the Loop number 16 from the year 2007, featuring Dr. Joel Brown, who is an evolutionary ecologist at UIC, talking to us about rats in Chicago. And all these years later, we still have rats around here, but hey, at least we're not the rattiest city in America anymore. Now we're number 2 on the list. Little victories, right? Absolutely. And that'll do it. Outside the Loop show number 995 is done. Thank you so much for listening to the show today. Thanks, as always, to Bob Ferguson, who is our engineer on duty in the WGN radio studio. Fergie will be there coming up on November 22nd at Fitzgerald's, so I think you should be too. Go ahead and grab those RSVP tickets. It's totally free. Would love to see you out at Fitzgerald's for the Outside the Loop 1000 taping. Have a great week. I'll talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.